back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We will, at some point, recon on all things John Means and no-hitters. Some guys that remember the Palmer no-hitter and the Wilhelm going back into the day. But we're going to do some politics in this one. And before we do that, I just want to give a little love straight up to all of our Crab Cake sponsors and everybody getting involved to put the Crab Cake tour together. We're going to be making more announcements as we get up on Memorial Day and the crabs get bigger and fatter. But we're going to be starting with Crab Cakes at Fadley's next week and, of course, at Costas next week as well. And then we're headed to State Fair for our coming out party. Mask off, second shot. Hopefully the hangover will be over from that Pfizer thing when it's all over. Don Mueller and I will be getting together in the 21228 to celebrate Cicadas, Spring, Music City, Johnny O running for Baltimore County Executive again, which is where I'll hand it off to you, Don Mueller. How are you? And please tell your son, at Jeff Mueller, at Mueller and Gary, to sell my condo. It's now on the market. So there.
Go. Call Jeff Mueller, Mueller and Gary Realty. You'll notice my background paying tribute to our good friend Frazier Smith, gone far too soon. One of the really great guys, and I my guess is that our guests will have some thoughts on Frazier as well. But as you said, Nestor, this is the first of what we think will be a recurring segment on Baltimore Positive, the pundit and the pollster.
Will this be the spiciest segment? Should we get like McCormick to underwrite? Because this is going to be spicy.
There you go. This is spicy stuff. I mean, just look at our guests. And we've got the founding partner of KO Public Affairs checking in from the other side of the country in Colorado, and our favorite pollster from the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center at Goucher College, Professor Malia Cromer. Guys, welcome back. Malia, love the specs.
John, I appreciate it.
So let's, breaking news, before we get into all the stuff we wanted to talk about, we will ask you a little bit about crab cakes, but right as we were coming on to record this segment, we all got emails. Our inbox blew up. It was an email from Baltimore County Executive John Olszewski Jr. saying that after much thought, he's decided to try to institutionalize his leadership in Baltimore County and run for another term. As I've said, some reporters have already called me, done a couple of interviews, said it's great news for Baltimore County. Not sure it's great news for the state, because Johnny would have been an incredible governor, but certainly for those of us who love this county, it's great news. Malia, you make no bones about it. You got a soft spot for the county executive. He's one of your Goucher guys.
Yeah, that's right. Johnny, the county executive is a Goucher alum, so we love to see that. I also served on his dissertation committee. So when he was finishing his PhD at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, I served on that committee and oversaw some of the excellent research he did. So, listen, it's in a way, it's not that surprising. The county executive is a son of Baltimore County, grew up, received both of his degrees from two Baltimore County colleges, and is serving as county executive. It's not surprising in that way that he's going to stay for a second term to serve in that capacity. But now the big question is who he will eventually throw that weight behind. It's the crucial county in this election. It will, especially right now, we don't have a clear Baltimore County region candidate. And so his endorsement will matter a lot. And so he'll be a very highly sought after supporter.
Well, there's no doubt, Damien, I'm going to jump to you because you are a veteran of political campaigns, state, local, national.
That's why he's on a hill somewhere.
Exactly. This really does.
I wish that were true, but it's not. All I ever was just an incumbent protectionist. So I love this Johnny O. I love this Johnny O storyline because Don and I actually had a chance to run a reelection campaign for a very successful first term county executive. And it's the most fun in the world because you get to talk about the achievements of, a very small set of workers, 6,000 Baltimore County employees who do amazing stuff over this gigantic county. And you get to go out there and brag about them at the Nature Center or, you know, down at Bowley's Quarters or at a library in Randallstown. He's, you know, he's going to have the time of his life defending his record. He's a progressive county executive, which, you know, he is obviously a progressive county executive. And that is uncharted water in Baltimore County, in a sense. And I think for two terms, at least, Ted Venatulis was a big reformer, but went on to run for governor. So I just think I think it's great news
Ted's
for Baltimore County.
Damien, let me jump in. I think there was a lesson, right? And both of you can jump back in. And Ted would have been advising Johnny, I think, to do just what he did. Because I think when Ted looks back, there were a lot of people who wanted Ted to run for a second term. And he decided to try to capture his momentum and the excitement that he had created to run for governor after one term. And it never worked out. And I think looking back, I think Ted would say, I wish I had stayed and institutionalized my change. So I think the Ted Venatulis reference is a really good one. Listen, let's just jump right in there because, Malia, you brought it up. Now with Johnny out of the race, and we can talk about Johnny's future because it's bright, as you said, Malia.
Let's talk about the Colleen Martin Lauer primary, because that's the most important thing right now, is who in this governor's race is going to earn the advice of Colleen Martin Lauer.
Let's break out here on the inside baseball, because those of us on this call know Colleen, know what she brings, knows the power of what she does. Tell our listeners, Damien, who Colleen Martin Lauer is and why they should be paying attention in the next couple of weeks.
I mean, she is the quiet sotto voce voice in Maryland politics. She's behind the scenes, I think, the most astute advisor. She's known principally as a fundraiser, but her understanding of Maryland politics is greater than any consultant in the state or out. And she is just, she's a marvelous professional. And so I'm very interested to see who is able to earn her to be a part of their team. And she'll probably kill me for saying all this. So if you don't see
her phone, her phone is absolutely.
Well, let me jump in here as the citizen and the voter. What earns her candidacy, but what's going to win? What, Malia, you're in the water
well,
all the time.
That's what she's going to say.
Yeah, what's going to win this time around? Because we've already talked to a couple of these candidates. You know, Michael Steele's going to have a crab cake with me on this tour. And, you know, we're hearing about all the other races going on in the first and all these other things. We're right back into this political thing, and we were just climbing the Capitol. Feels like 12 weeks ago, right?
That's an interesting way to put it. Sure. Listen, we're many months away from voters actually solidifying any sort of agenda that they want to see. But, you know, you're going to be coming off of 8 years of a Republican incumbent and 8 years, unless the wheels fall off here in the last, you know, 18 or so months, that he'll probably leave office with strong approval ratings. And so for a Democrat, they need to make the case, obviously, to the state voters that they are the change that now is needed in the state. It becomes another change election from 8 years of a Republican. They can talk about, try to build upon some of the good things that the Democratic legislature has done, the reinvestment in public schools. Where can they take that to the next level? And it becomes a regional race again, right? So where the regional power base is in the state, that's why with the county executive bowing out, it becomes really important, because who takes that Baltimore region? Baltimore County has vote rich, really important. And it's really important in the general election. If you can do well in Baltimore County, you can do really well with the state's electorate. And just one more note on the county executive. What's interesting for him in his future is that power of youth. You know, at 38 or 39 years old, he can sit out for 8 years. Let's say a Democrat does win, is a two-term incumbent, and he's still not 50. You know, it still puts him in like under 60 years old. So there's a lot of runway for somebody of his age to have a long political career.
I don't want to make Baltimore County citizens nervous who this morning are feeling very good that their outstanding Baltimore County executive is going to be there for another 6 years. But I joked with some of the executives team in the last day or two when I learned about this decision. was that if, because of what you just said, Malia, and you and Damian weigh in on this, it would not surprise me at all if 6 months, 9 months down the road, when this race crystallizes a little bit, that there'll be some other phone calls made and the county executive may have another decision to make, because it's hard for me to imagine that he won't be on everyone's short list as a lieutenant governor. I mean, I, as you said, vote rich county, extremely popular county executive. I'm guessing, I haven't seen any polls, but I'm guessing he would poll, you know, roughly at 70%, which is unheard of in this day and age. I think his phone will be ringing to folks saying, given his age, how about being lieutenant governor? Let's make this, let's take this show on the road. What are your thoughts on that, Damian?
I think that if you are a Baltimore County executive that is critical to getting a governor, a Democratic governor elected, you don't need to be lieutenant governor. You can, you know it better than anybody. You saw it firsthand. When you're winning in a critical swing county in a governor's race, or you back a particular candidate, it is a seismic experience. So I look forward to that. I also think it's a big moment for Wes Moore to, you know, continue to consolidate a lot of support in the Baltimore region. People are really trying to push him on to run. So I think this is another indication that his candidacy is growing and gaining momentum.
Who are the candidates here? Make it clear for the audience. Who's in the game as you see it right now?
All right, Malia, you're putting out a poll. Who do you list? Who do you list?
I was just thinking about this in terms of constructing a poll, because of the county executive's last name, I was writing down, I was like, how would I do the phonetic spelling for the pollsters to read, which is one of the things that you have to do when you're writing these polls out. You have to make sure that they're saying the last name correctly. And he has a tough one to actually phonetically spell out. But you're right. So there, and Damian can help me out here. I mean, obviously, Wes Moore is a really dynamic candidate. When I said there wasn't a Baltimore candidate, I meant there wasn't a Baltimore County candidate. But obviously, hit with a home base in Baltimore County. He's an incredibly dynamic person. It's, if you ever meet him, it's one of those, it's, you can tell that this is somebody who is going to do really well on a campaign trail. I mean, John King, Perez, obviously Peter Francho, the sitting comptroller, he comes into it with a massive amount of money. And that's a hard thing to beat. So everybody's going to have to up that fundraising game to meet where Francho already is. And that's
the super kind for Sherm Baker of Prince George's County. Mike Rosenbaum, you know, a major tech executive. And
Damian, I keep hearing, former Attorney General Doug Gansler still taking a hard look at the race.
Yeah, he really, I think he looks back at that last race and sort of understood when the establishment gets behind a lieutenant governor, no matter how popular you are, it remains a real challenge to get into that. You know, you get really challenged in that Democratic primary space. So I think now he feels like he can be sort of the establishment known quality in Democratic Party circles. People all across the state who've been going to party events for years and years know and trust Doug. You know, I think that's how he sees his lane opening up for him.
I do think Malia is on to something, Nestor, when she talks about Wes Moore, and we've had Wes on several times on Baltimore Positive. It's not, I don't think it's just me. I've heard others say, until you've been around Wes Moore and watch Wes Moore in a group of people, small or large, it's difficult for people to understand how electric he can be. Nestor and I tell the story. Wes was probably, Nestor, one of the last live shows that we did at State Fair. And we had done a lot of them, and people pay attention and don't. They're eating, they're having their chicken and waffles, or their, you know, whatever, beer and
this State Fair right here.
There you go. They're having all their food at State Fair, but they don't normally react. The night Wes more.
Well, we don't usually do night, and I know we were a little. He
was cocktail
on a Friday
hour.
Night, and we were like, it was Christmas time. It was right before Christmas, so it was maybe 2 months before the plague, right?
And
we were worried about like. Intruding on dinner. You guys have been to State Fair. You both have met us at State Fair. So we were like, you know, I don't know how this is going to play or whatever. And Evan's like, no, you know, well, it'll be fine or whatever. And he was like standing ovation, you know, it was like that kind of thing.
People were cheering. And
people
remember.
Didn't know he was there. It was just sort of, they were just having dinner, right? Yeah. Literally.
So it was pretty electric. So that gets to what you're talking about, Malia. But also, this is why you guys are great to have on, and why I look forward to all of our discussions moving forward. Malia, you without a doubt are recognized. You're the preeminent pollster now in the state of Maryland. When people want to know what people in the state are thinking, they come to you. You've been out in the field fairly recently. Talk about our state and what you're learning and what it is and what they think. Talk about Maryland for people who might not be as familiar with it.
I will, but I do want to make, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that it is tough for me as a woman, though, to look at this crowd of candidates that are assembling on the Democratic side, at least, and notice that there is something painfully missing. And we do not have a female candidate on the Democratic side. Now, on the Republican side, we have Kelly Scholz, who is running the current Commerce Secretary. She obviously, you know, we focus a lot on the Democratic side. That's a tough candidate that's a good candidate for Republicans on their side.
She's dynamic, and she will be assuming she gets the nomination, depending on what, I mean, a primary between Kelly Scholz and Michael Steele. Would I mean, for people like you, Malia, it'll be like a kid in a candy shop. I mean, that will be fun stuff. I do wonder, and you mentioned it, Malia, and Damian, jump in. We had Tharoo Vinarajah on recently, who's also a regular contributor, and we were discussing the lack of a female candidate on the Democratic side and whether or not his sister, Chris, who had a pretty dynamic run the last time around, she didn't get to the finish line, but she excited a lot of people, whether she might drop back and take another look at this race now, given that there's no females on the Democratic side.
I'm not sure. I will say this for Chris Vinarajah. I obviously watched her closely during that last election cycle. She was somebody who wasn't able to really gain traction in the larger Democratic electorate. But if you were the type of individual who were going to these Democratic forums, it was impossible for you not to walk away without being sort of impressed with her as a candidate. She did end up doing, I think, better than a lot of folks expected in terms of the overall vote share. So she's certainly somebody, I'm not sure if she's interested at all or if that there's any there. But I will say on the comptroller side, and so the race for, as Peter Francia now looks to be governor, you know, that opens up the race for state comptroller. And we have state delegate Brooke Learman running. Which right now, it's really tough as a woman to look at a state with such history of women's representation and to have just no women in the congressional delegation and no women right now in the statewide offices, except for, of course, Speaker Adrienne Jones, as you know, Speaker of the House of Delegates. We're talking about statewide elected office, though.
Want to reset everything. Don Moeller and I doing some Baltimore Positive right now, getting ready for the Crab Cake Tour that begins over at our sponsor at Fadley's next week on the eve of Preakness, of course. And Don and I will be reconning on all things sports and the John Means no-hitter. Damian O'Doherty, our guest, along with Malia Cromer, two veterans here of all things Baltimore Positive. You know, Damian, I was going to ask you, and this is sort of an adjunct to Don's question, I guess, and I come from the village idiot standpoint. You're out on a hill in Colorado when you meet people that aren't from Maryland, they'd say, how does a state that so wildly votes blue and votes against all things Trumplandia, how do they wind up with a Republican governor who's voting for Reagan and going along with everything that Trump has done, sort of, kind of, and now we're going to have Republican candidates, and Michael Steele has been the ultimate, I want nothing to do with that, I'm Republican classic, this state's weird. As much as I got the flag here, I would think that this is, as much as we're in a really partisan, weird place in this country where you're one or the other, there's some sort of weird purple sky going on here that I'm sure you've had to go across the country and explain to people to some degree.
You know, I do it in a completely self-serving way. So I always say, you know, no Democrat has won in Maryland for the governorship this millennia, but for somebody with an apostrophe in their name. So, you know, that's a really, you know, Glendening in 98, and then O'Malley has been the only person to do it since.
How does it keep happening? How do Democrats keep voting for a Republican, and how will that happen this time? Because I voted for Ehrlich. I pimped for Ehrlich. Hey,
Nestor, let's yeah, that's a great question, but Damien, give me a little
quick. Into him in a casino, and I ask him how he's putting people look like me in cages. So I got some real differences with Bob now. Like, but, it's one of the real regrets I have in my 30 years of having a live microphone is having supported that campaign the way I did. I mean that.
And take Nestor's question, Damien and Malia, and let's add a little wrinkle.
I do this for a living, quite frankly.
Add a wrinkle.
I got that wrong.
Add a wrinkle to it, and that is, what did Governor O'Malley, and again, full disclosure, very close friends of yours, Damien, friend of mine, we have great respect for the governor, but what did Governor O'Malley do in terms of communicating with voters? And Malia, this will be a great question for you, that other Democrats haven't been able to find the magic sauce, so to speak.
Well, imagine growing up in politics in Baltimore City and being accountable to, you know, some of the most discerning voters. You know, I'm thinking about African-American women between, you know, 45 and 70 years old that have seen it all and take no BS, and having to be accountable to folks like that day in, day out, the city of Baltimore with big challenges and big issues. And when something terrible happened in the community, he didn't stand up and tut the community. He knew it was grieving. He knew it was hurting. He stepped in and tried to find a way to solve those problems. And so I see that so lacking when I watch the news coverage of the leadership in the state coming down to Baltimore and the way they.
Oh, we'll get to that. Matt Gallagher's Facebook. We'll get to that, because that was good stuff this week, because that needs to be talked about.
So I think it's about connecting with real people everywhere you go. And Governor O'Malley had a one Maryland approach. He didn't pit one part of the state against another. He didn't he tried to get everybody to find solutions and work together. So I think if you're a solutions oriented person, you know, and you're interested in more than just your favorability ratings, and you want to get things done, man, you've got to be more connective with people and more respectful of community. That's how you get things done.
Let's pick up on that, Damien. I love it. And Malia, I want to turn to you, because I think Damien's point leads me to one of the things I wanted to run by both of you. Was Carville onto something recently when he said Democrats have to speak differently to people? Because I hear Damien saying that, and I looked at that Carville interview several times, looked at the reactions. You're the pollster. You take our pulse all the time. Is Carville onto something in terms of messaging, Malia?
To wade into the sort of like woke culture debate, which I really don't want to do. I will say this. The underlying message, I think, that I would always say to people is that Twitter public opinion isn't actually public opinion. So it's important that we listen to activists. It's important that we listen to loud voices. But it's also really important that you try to spend the time focusing on what everyday voters think and what everyday voters care about. And oftentimes there's a disconnect between the world we see on social media and the world we actually see with everyday voters. Not that the people on social media aren't real voters, because they are. They just aren't representative voters. And well, I think that was what his comment was sort of about, like the sort of the vocal progressive left and their sort of values, putting those values on the more moderate voters that really make up the majority of most states, and particularly this state as well.
Well, I want to talk more about the state, and I think you make a good point. I think the whole analysis of the Carville thing got hung up in the woke piece, and I think he was much more addressing what you're saying there, and it goes back to the beginning of our conversation. I think it's what has made County Executive Ushefsky so effective, in that he's able to have these quote unquote, whatever that means, progressive visions for the county in terms of making it more transparent, doing great things on police reform. looking at the environment, protecting the environment, but at the same time, recognizing its fiscal stability and talking common sense to folks. So now I turn back to you, Malia, and say, you've been out there. What do you think the people of Maryland truly care? Take the politics out of it. I don't care about D or R. What do they care about? What floats their boat?
So we've been, the Goucher poll is 9 years old this year. So in the fall, we'll turn nine and we'll have our 10-year anniversary in 2022. So we've been asking Marylanders for a long time now. I feel old. I feel really like I just got here yesterday, but now we're going to be a decade old here. Listen, we've asked consistently. Things that come up is like education, economic issues are always the two biggest issues. It's not that doesn't make Maryland unique. But the pressure that Maryland feels, perhaps other than different states, is that they really do want a state government that's providing government services. We've asked that question directly. They want an active state government that's helping alleviate or helping people live their everyday lives. At the same time, they are really there's a really concern about like the paying taxes. It's the thing that lingers, thing that they're worried about. It comes up on every single poll. And so it is going to be incumbent, particularly for Democratic lawmakers, to try to find that balance. The Democrats have a bad reputation as being sort of tax heavy, even when that's not fair, even it's not always fair. But it's this reinvestment in Kerwin is going to be really important. How it gets implemented in the next few years is going to be really important because they have to make the case that it's been worth the tax investment. So it'll be important for them to showcase, so to really showcase and cheerlead the things that they have done, even under this beautiful majority under the Hogan years, cheerlead the things they've done, talk about why they're important and talk about why that investment is worth it, tying those two things together. That to me is the big thing that always shows up on our polls. You have to tie the two together. So you have to be fiscally show fiscal responsibility, and then also show a consistent value alignment with Maryland voters, which is an investment in programs that help people and public education.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me, and maybe you can shed some light, and Damian, you're in states all across the nation. One of the things that Nestor and I have spent a lot of time talking about is this disconnect, which is fascinating to me as someone who studied politics my entire life, this disconnect between where people are on issues and how it then is reflected in support for one party or another. It's not a reach to say, Malia, that on every single major issue of the day, the Democrats enjoy broad-ranging support, anywhere from mid-50s to up to 70 to 80%. There's not one issue, maybe immigration, but other than immigration, there's not one issue that the Democratic Party supports that the overwhelming number of the American people don't support, but that doesn't translate into support at the ballot box. For example, I think most people feel that Democrats will lose the House in 2022. How does that, you're out there at the Sarah T. Hughes Center and you're trying to educate young kids. What is that disconnect? What is happening there with that?
And Damian really could speak to this better than I could as a messaging expert. Sometimes it becomes a messaging issue. So like back in October, we asked Marylanders a broad range of their attitudes on police reform. And listen, by and large, you know, you have really like strong support for body cameras, strong support for more transparent reporting for misconduct issues. And you even have support for reallocating some police budgets to things like community-based, like social programs, like the wraparound programs that really help prevent crime. But then when you start to talk about defunding the police, that triggers a lot of voters in a negative way. And so it's incumbent then, again, of folks who are trying to craft these messages to meet policy goals that are supported by a wide range of Marylanders, is to talk about them effectively. Now, that being said, For those individuals who are really strong on the beef on the police side in terms of police reform, that's their policy issue that they're advocating for. And they have every right as American citizens to advocate strongly for those positions. But there should be also recognition about how messages play in terms of voters at large to be able to achieve those goals.
Damien, you're our message. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Postal Malia Cromer joining us here along with Damien O'Doherty from KO High up on a hill. Go ahead, Don. You had something.
I was going to say, Damien, you're the messaging guru. Take what Malia just said and put it into practical.
I give it to you. Ready? It's when your pollster and your data scientist on your campaign say, no, I don't want you to go see Clem Kakis and Arbutus because you look around those precincts, we haven't been performing that well as Democrats down there. I'd rather see your time spent somewhere else. Or we don't want you to go to the crab feast in Wilson Point, because, those voters are all going to go the other way on us and it's not worth your time. You know, if you want to be a county executive of a large jurisdiction of 800,000 people, or you want to be a governor of a state like Maryland or Colorado, you've got to find ways to put yourselves in those situations where you're with real people talking their language. You know, Don, nobody did that better than you. I always hope to drag you back into public life because you've done it better than anybody else. But and Larry Hogan does a wonderful job with this. In many respects, he has a tonal understanding of politics, which means, he's not so concerned about what he's doing or what he's getting done, but how he's sounding and connecting with voters at that moment in time. And that's really, his principal concern.
Well, let me jump in here on this because I did write down how Baltimore gets used as a ping pong ball in this whole thing, whether it's a candidate from the DC Beltway, whether it's a woman who's a Republican or a male who's a Democrat, the referendum, as I see it, driving east on 50 or west on 70. And by the way, I'm going to be doing the whole state of Maryland in August from Ocean City out to Deep Creek. So I'm going to see some parts of the state I've never seen. Damien, Malia, I'm going to be looking for some advice on Rocky Gap Park and what's going on over near Cambridge and Solomon's Island. Moeller was sending me Smith Island cake pictures and telling me to take the ferry and Oxford and Tillman. I got all this going on. So I'm going to be doing all of this in August to promote our great state and great Maryland crab, which some places serve a crab that says it's Maryland. It's not, but I'll get Baltimore. Everywhere you'll go in this state, people hold their nose about Baltimore. People that love the Orioles hold their nose about Baltimore. And that sells. One of the reasons we did Baltimore Positive is I go to Carroll County, Harford County, Wilson Point, Dundalk, places that are adjacent to Baltimore. They say, I don't go into the city. I'm like, I can see your place from here. I see where you live. What do you mean you don't come here? So it's very easy to kick Baltimore. We got TV stations that are progressive that kick Baltimore every single night. Don't realize they're doing it. And then there's David Simon who lives here and loves it and doesn't want to kick it, but has to be honest about it. Like I am with the baseball team sometimes, but Baltimore will be the middle of all of this one way or another, because you can't love it too much and be too popular. And if you want to fix it, that's too progressive. I don't know. You guys tell me, but Baltimore's a ping pong ball in this thing.
Look, I decided that I was going to treat Baltimore like I see all these fancy New Yorkers, anywhere around the country, they wear those stripes with pride. And that's the goal I've had. And since I've had that attitude, Nestor, I've been able to attract, tens of millions of dollars in new investment into South Baltimore. And we've also feel so blessed to have, a person like Stuart Bainum out there saying he wants to spend $65 million to acquire the Baltimore Sun and give it back to the people of Baltimore in the form of a nonprofit. So sometimes, you get to dial out of town a little bit and you get to see the community strengths. And so I just want to offer some of those very positive highlights as we go into this Preakness week.
But how is that, Malia, for someone who says, yeah, I live in Maryland, but screw those people in Baltimore. If you're against them, I'm with you, because I see and feel that in a way as a 52-year-old here in a way that I never, ever felt it 10 years ago, certainly not 20 years ago when I was pimping for Ehrlich. You know, like, I think it's – there's a different temperature now. We talked at length with Michael Steele about this.
So just really quick, I want to make just – Jamie said something really important in his last – what he was saying. You know, pollsters don't tell people all the time where not to go, but I think that we present opportunities for people. And so every time I think about, like, our poll results, if you are not doing well on a certain issue, or if the minimum wage isn't polling like you like, or your issue isn't polling where you want it to be, to me, that's an opportunity for you to refine your message and put the work in. And so I think that I have to be careful to think about, like, what polls tell you not to do, but what polls can show you where you need to grow. That's my positive spin on public opinion polling. But that might not be Damien's experience with pollsters. That's my, you know, my positive view. But in terms of, like, how people view Baltimore, listen, it's a really compelling question, and it's a question that we have a ton of anecdotes, but very little data. And that's, I think, the frustrating part for me. We had asked a few years ago on the Goucher poll whether folks viewed Baltimore City as the economic engine of the state. And by and large, a majority of folks did not. They no longer view Baltimore City as an economic engine. And that is an example of there's a huge disconnect between what reality is and what people perceive that reality to be, because Baltimore City absolutely is an economic engine of this state. And so I think that those things are important, but I think it's also really important that we're careful with our language, that, you know, just because there's a bunch of anecdotes of people saying they don't want to get into the city, that we don't pretend that that was a scientific public opinion poll of exactly what people think. Not to say that I think the city, that there are negative attitudes about the city. Those things definitely exist, but I actually think there should be more research done. We need to better understand why it is that the homeowner rates are off the charts here. Like, look at the work Live Baltimore is doing. Look at you should put your house on the market right here. I'm in Baltimore City. Like, it's a hot real estate market.
Did it this week. Let's go. Let's roll the dice. Let's do it.
Well, didn't the census just report that Baltimore City is about the same size as Anne Arundel County, and that once little Howard County is now half the size of Baltimore. Baltimore County still looms largest through the region. It was interesting to see Richard Florida get sort of laughed out of the Twitter room when he said that Baltimore needed to, whatever it did with its downtown, needed to connect with suburbanites. There was a lot of laughter about that, but it really shows you that I think this is an opportunity for Baltimore to see itself for what it is, which is a community of 600,000 people that are deeply tied to the surrounding counties around them. And I think everybody needs to start thinking about regional solutions that bring efficiency and accountability for the taxpayer in region wide.
Well, we have truly just scratched the surface. Can't wait to have you back on next month. We want to talk about, which we didn't get to today, we had breaking news, but we want to talk about your favorite elected officials and memories, and we want to talk about the national political climate. By that time, we will have seen what happens to Liz Cheney and what's happening there with Elise Stefanik. I mean, this thing going on in the Republican Party is for those of us who are political junkies, one of the most amazing stories to follow. But before we get out of here, Malia, you've got friends from all over. When they come to town and they say to you, all right, take us to your favorite crab cake place, where do you take them?
So that's a really hard question for me to answer, because I've been a vegetarian for a long time. So that
you have good asparagus.
You have friends that you love the broccoli and acubon.
Yes, that's right. So that's a tough question for me to ask. I really do. LP Steamers is great. That's they're in my neck of the woods in South Baltimore, and they're a wonderful place to be. You know, and I just want to just quickly say, like, I love the fact that you have Fraser Smith in your background, Dawn, today. When I first came to Baltimore, he was immediately kind to me. He allowed me to go on Inside Maryland Politics, which was his show on WIPR when I first started. And that was a big deal for somebody who just moved to the state. And I will never forget. You never forget the people who are kind to you when they had no reason to be. And it's nice to see that up on your background.
Well, he's such, and I want to ask Damian your reflections on Frazier as well before we get out of here, as well as your crab cake connection. But I say to people, you know, obviously over the last few weeks, folks have said to me, Don, you knew Frazier. I said, yeah, I knew him well. We got to be good friends over the years. Nestor and I just feel so blessed to have had him for a number of episodes.
Well, I'm embarrassed that I walked the newsroom with him for 6 years, and I was always very intimidated by him.
Well, yeah. Thank
he was
you
like
all
too smart
featuring.
To bother, and too, you know, like literally. Lou Cedrone and I would talk movies in a corner, but you left Frazier alone.
I mean, you're just 17, you know.
Those people.
What are
those
reflections, Damian? You followed this for a long time.
I just think that people like Frazier have had to work within a very tight framework to tell stories across generations. You know, and you all gave him as many opportunities to sort of really show a more full of himself, to a more full portrait of who he is to a lot of people that care about journalism and a lot of people that care about Maryland and Baltimore. So I'm grateful for you guys having him on so frequently, because I know that is my regret.
Well, thank you. Oh, he was wonderful. And
our regret is we didn't have him more frequently.
We should have had him on weekly.
Which is why we're going to bother you guys more often now. We need to get back with our friends. Right. We're unmasked. Get out to State Fair. Sit outside.
Well, everything you've done
cakes,
with the,
you know?
Everything you've done for your former colleague journalists with the Save Our Son campaign, all the support you've given, we just can't thank you enough. You know, you can't believe what you guys are doing has an impact like it does. And it does, because people see these SOS signals and they see the distress and they see the opportunity to save something important. And you guys have been a huge part of that. And just wanted to thank you.
Thank you,
thank you for all that.
Well, thank you. I would hate that. We hate the thought that we might not have a Sun paper. Damian, real quick, you're out there in Colorado, but when you get back and your clients from all over the world come in, where do you take them for a crab cake?
You know, I'm going to sound like a homer, but we really take them to Fadley's, not just because it's the real Maryland crab meat, which is talk about precious. That is some precious stuff, but it's also right in the heart of Baltimore, and you get to see so many different walks of life. That's why I always loved your show being right in the center of that, because you get some intersectionality that you can't find in any other city in America, I promise you.
Oh, it's absolutely true. We were sitting there one day doing a show 2 years ago, and a guy comes up and says, what are you guys doing? I said, Baltimore Positive. He said, I run this urban planning thing out of Edmonton. And like, I had him on the show. He's an urban planner, like one of the most interesting people. And I'm like, what are you doing here? The whole open the crab thing happened when a girl from Minnesota asked me how to pick a crab. And I showed her, and Don told me I was doing it wrong.
Well,
so,
and Nestor, yeah. how about one of our favorite moments that Damian will like? And Malia, you'll like it as a pollster, because people would be shocked. We are doing a show with former Governor O'Malley and a young African-American. When I say young, probably in his 30s. So he was a kid when the governor would have been mayor. And he walks by, and he does a double take, and he goes, and he points at him. He goes, whoa, you the mayor. And he's talking, you're the mayor.
He kept calling him the mayor.
He kept calling him the mayor. You're the mayor. And of course, the governor, Martin, lights up. And the kid goes, you the best mayor we ever had in this city. You the best mayor. Well, so that's why we've got to get back out live. But a lot of times people say, wait a minute, here's a young African-American from the streets of Baltimore City, who doesn't have this negative impression that a lot of people would want you to think that African-Americans might have towards Martin O'Malley. He says, you the best mayor.
It's actually quite the contrary, right? It's
happens
quite
the contrary. All
hey, Damian, I got to get back with you on this tour I'm doing, because I know you've been on every, you know, truck stop, road stop, morning crab ferry, you know, the whole deal. So I'm going to be doing this thing in August, because I'm getting out on the road. I've decided there's places I haven't seen here in Maryland I need to see. So I need some input from both of you on that. All right.
Nestor, my last point is that if people are not following on Twitter, Malia Cromer, one of the best Twitter files, she's shaking her head, but if you want to be entertained, jump on.
Are you getting spicier, Malia, on
It's
on
a
Twitter?
Little spicy on Twitter.
It is not spicy on Twitter. I actually try to keep it as like PG as possible, I think, at least, because the president of the college follows me. And so every time I tweet something dumb, during like business hours, I like wonder if I'm being judged.
It's like the cheat. It's the cheat code for cheat codes for Maryland politics is just follow Malia.
That's the old Dr. Seuss thing. Those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind, right? I guess something like that. Malia Cromer and Damien O'Doherty, they'll be with us every month. Don Mohler here, of course, former Baltimore County executive. All of it on behalf of Fadley's, where Damien gets his crab case. And I'll leave the Fadley story with this. I had Jason Cole on, longtime football writer, and I told him what I was doing. And I said, I'm doing this crab cake tour. He stops. He was like, I hope you're starting it at Fadley's. And I'm like, yeah. And this is a guy from the West Coast, you know? So right. We're going to start at Fadley's. We're going to Costas. We'll be at State Fair on the 21st. Don's putting together a little 21228 Lovin'. And then on and beyond to Essex and Parts North. And Johnny O, who's going to run again as Baltimore County executive. We're going to meet him up at Pappas. Brandon Scott's going to meet us at Coco's. We got a commitment from Barry Glassman up in Hartford County to meet us at Barrett's. And we're chasing down Stuart Pittman once I can get him past his horse racing little race we're having this week down in Anne Arundel, Canada, to go to G&M.
Putting them all on the spot. That's the way to do it. Hold them all accountable to one joint.
In addition to pizza, Dutch is going to have a crab cake.
Listen to me. I'm known as a bleeding heart progressive, okay? And the governor of our state voted for Ronald Reagan. I'm going Nixon on this, and I'm calling this crab cake diplomacy. That's what I'm doing here. So we're going to bring everybody together for a crab cake. You can't go wrong with that. Crab cake and a beer. Who's turning me down for that?
There you go.
Nobody.
Not you at Fadley's. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking politics, sports, and good stuff, and Preakness, too, at BaltimorePositive.com.